Radio Free Brooklyn. This is what Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit about you. How's it going? Lisa, it's sunny today, right? You know, I think that I got depressed when it was because of the weather, and I think that's real. You know what I mean? Because cavemen must have had to stay in when it was raining, and they got bored after they, you know, were finished fucking. I mean, you know, fucking doesn't take up the entire, you know, 5 days of being indoors. So I think it's natural. That's what I'm saying. It's natural to get depressed. If you were with me on that and you got depressed. So thanks so much for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit at Radio Free Brooklyn. It's the greatest radio station in the world, in the whole planet. And I think, you know, now's a really important time to support radical media that's not making any money. So you should support us by going to Radio Free Brooklyn .org/donate. Come on, folks. You know, we're putting this on for free, and the world is closing in on all of us. We need you. Stick up for us. Help us. This is going to be a really interesting day at the station for me. First of all, I have two call-ins, one short one, one long one. But I also want you to know this is the fucking fourth anniversary. 4 years that I've been doing this show. Can you believe it? And it's also 4 years that the station has been around, which since I've been here from the beginning, which is another reason you should donate money, radioforbrooklyn.org/donate. But also, it's my 196th show. Can you believe it? I mean, I never thought I was going to get past the first day. You should see all the technology in here. I thought I was so incompetent. I would never even, I mean, 4 years, man. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being here right now, anyway, if you're listening. Right now, live. And I know some, okay, so here's the deal. I am going to have this friend of mine, Steve, call in. Steve is from Nova Scotia. Steve, I hope you're listening. And he actually came to New York a couple weeks ago and went to a show because he heard somebody, Kelsey Kane, that I was interviewing on the show, talking about the show that she was having, a comedy show at Union Hall. And it was called, it was a benefit, but her particular character is called Penis CK, actually. And what she does is dress up like Louis CK and masturbate with this really amazing dildo that looks like kind of a real penis. Not, it doesn't look like, whoa, a dildo. It looks more like a penis. So, and the funny connection is that she actually did have an interview because she was talking about going in advertising. So we do actually, there is like a more of a connection than I realized. So the second guest that's going to be our major guest is George Tenenbaum. And I know George is listening right now because I just spoke with him on the phone a couple of minutes ago and we were going over our mutual mishigas. So George is somebody that I met, I think it was 1990 in my 30s. We worked together from 1990 to 1995 at a very well-known, well-respected advertising agency, Alley and Gargano. And when we started there, George was my partner, and we worked together, you know, teams, our director, copywriter, and we worked together for a long time, and George has made his way up to the top, the very top of the creative advertising business. And he's making so much money. I don't have any idea how much money he's making, but he's got to be making a lot of money. He's incredibly well respected. And look at me. I'm working at a nonprofit for nothing on this radio show. So, you know, that, like, I don't know who won there. George and I are both very competitive. So we're going to be talking about our time together and maybe how our lives have, how well George has done and what a loser I am. That's what we're going to be talking about. Also, just so you know, I have a lot of unresolved issues about my time in advertising. So stay tuned for me being getting upset. And I don't know, maybe we'll have a fight. Maybe George and I'll have a fight. So I'm going to ask Steve, are you there? Can you call in Steve from Nova Scotia? Steve, if you're there, call in. Let's hope this works. Steve. Okay, well, you know what? Steve isn't around, maybe. So, let's see. Let me just see what's going on here. It's on auto. Well, anyway, if we can't get Steve, then I guess we'll go right to George. George? Oh, my God. Is this not working? It's on auto. It's up. What could be wrong? Hey. Call in.
It's on auto.
Lisa.
Hey, George. There, we made
hey,
it work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, the desk phone won't let me put you on hold.
Oh, so, okay. Well, here we are. Here we are. And
yeah,
I guess
I'm sorry
like,
about Steve.
Yeah, you know, Steve, what happened was, let me just finish so everybody knows. This is what I wanted to know. So Steve Steve came to Steve and his wife, they came down from Nova Scotia and met us in Brooklyn, me and my husband, and we had a drink before the show. We saw the show, but it was really late at night, and my husband just couldn't take it, so we had to leave. And I never got to see Pina C.K., a.k.a. Kelsey Kane, jerk off on stage.
Oh.
And it was very disappointing, and I was hoping that Steve would fill me in, but, you know, I guess we'll have to do that another time. So, George, I'm really grateful to have you on the phone and all that, and it's all working, and here we are. So I was starting to tell people, did you hear how I sort of described you?
I did. I should lower the volume on the site, right? Because I'm hearing
are you getting feedback?
Yeah, okay. I can turn down the volume so I don't need to hear myself.
Okay.
I hear myself all day.
So anyway, I was telling everybody, you heard me say that we worked together. I mean, I don't even remember how old I was. I know I was in my mid-30s.
We were youthful. We had a gleam in our eyes.
I know, and we started on the same exact day, and we were
April 16th.
Oh my God, your memory is like
1990.
Oh my God, and we were so excited, right?
It was Allie and Gargano.
We were both like ambitious about advertising.
Yeah.
No one had heard of the internet. There were no one's working like in content development or web series.
No.
We were in the thick of it, right? We were hot shit.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were hot shit that day you walked into work at Allie and Gargano?
Well, I mean, the offices themselves were amazing. They were intimidatingly slick, and I don't know if you remember this.
I'm sure I don't.
There were no name tapes, so the office, the hallways, you know, people's offices had no names.
I didn't know that.
So somebody would, you know, Ed Butler would say, "Go down to Mike's office." You know, it took. I mean, it took me a couple of weeks.
Right, but we were hired
I
just want people to know, like at that time, at the advertising, there were a lot of really famous advertising had a much more visible part of the culture, right?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of famous ad campaigns, and we were hired by Mike Tesh. And what was, help me out, George, what was Mike Tesh famous for?
Federal Express, you know, Hertz, Dunkin' Donuts. I mean, Mike Tesh was Mike Tesh. He was a powerful. For a short guy, he was a big name.
For a short Jew. So we were looking at each other going like, man, we're cool. We made it. We're good. Like we were both
little
like,
little did we know.
So we were on a retail account, the bank in New York, and it was a really, really, it was a really difficult account because the turnaround was really, really fast, right?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was, I mean, there was a time I think we were doing about 2 ads a week.
Yeah.
Which was, you were constantly, you know, spinning out things, taking them, getting them approved, going down to the client, selling them.
Yeah. Doing the shoots. Remember how many shoots we used to do shoots all the time?
It was great experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And print was still had some esteem in those days.
Yeah. We were kind of young in the business, in that group, in that business, in that culture, you know, and Alan Gargano, there were a lot of venerable people there.
Yeah,
and so we were,
a nice way of saying old.
There are a lot of old farts like we are now. And then so we were
to be envied.
We were bragging. That was probably the first and last time I bragged about my job in advertising. So George, I want to tell people about you. So George, like I was saying before, folks, that George is I flunked out of advertising. Do you know that's my line now? That I flunked out. That's what I tell everybody, that I flunked out of advertising.
You know, there's a lot of people though who say, I'm reading a book about how the United States basically stole a third of our landmass from Mexico, but basically through wars and acquisitions.
Mm-hmm.
And these people who found themselves on the wrong side of the border or the other side of the border would say, I didn't move, the border did. It's just like you hear some Republicans say, you know, I didn't leave the Republican Party, the Republican Party left me. Like, advertising left all of us. It's not, it's just not the same business. Obviously I heard your intro. It's the people who lasted aren't necessarily good or better. It's just,
well, I mean, you know, that's, I mean, it's, well, no, I mean, it's a, it, you know, that's like, that's a different, you know, that's a different story. I mean, it's not, it's none of these creative fields, and I failed in all of them, I like to say, are a meritocracy completely.
Right.
I mean, there is a certain sense, but it's really a combination, all of them, of the same skills, which is A, talent, B, drive, C, people skills, and go, you know, keep discipline. There's so many factors. But I just wanted to, I'm looking for your bio, George, because, oh, here it is. George Tannenbaum. I took your bio off of LinkedIn because it's like most people I know don't care about their LinkedIn, but yours is like really like killer. So I listen, guys, you think that all my friends are like really like slumming at losers. I have George Tannenbaum. He's doing incredibly well. He has 8,803 followers on LinkedIn. That is my friend. George, you're my friend, right?
Is that a lot?
It's a lot. Executive Creative Director and Copy Chief at Ogilvy and Mather Advertising. And you're in charge of one of the biggest accounts there, right, George? Isn't that right?
Yeah, the biggest account in the holding company, actually.
Yeah, very funny. And how many people? You have a lot of people working for you and stuff like that?
You know, creative departments are so much smaller than they used to be.
Yeah.
But
you're in charge of a lot of shit. You go and you meet the client. Yeah. You're in charge of a lot of shit.
The
buck stops with you.
Yeah, somewhat, yeah.
Yeah. As much as it stops with anybody.
Yeah, there's still people who can yell at me.
Yeah, well, yeah, like your wife. I could yell at you if I wanted to.
Yes,
but
exactly.
I could definitely yell at you and I could think of things. But I'm too busy yelling at my own husband. So... But, you know, this is really interesting, George. So one of the things, this is what struck me. Okay. So one of the things, okay, so I'm going to sound like really envious and I'm angry and bitter about my advertising career, George, having nothing, not necessarily, I mean, you know, just the whole thing in general. Not, don't take it personally.
No. It's not my fault.
Because I feel like that I've no self-esteem and I can't fake it. And so I'm really mad about that, that I didn't do well because I couldn't fake my lack of self-esteem. George, you have no self-esteem either, but you are able to completely transcend that. So, right? Is that right?
Yeah. I have no self-esteem.
But you transcend it completely. So I'm going to read to you, folks. Are you listening? Listen up, kids out there. Because if you want to, if you ever really want to earn a living, here's the kind of person that can earn a living. This is what it says on George Tenenbaum's LinkedIn page. After it says executive creative director and copy chief, there are no, George, how do you put this bullshit on there? Listen to this. This is how George talks about himself. There's no other creative in the world who's been recommended by the writer of the world's most famous commercial, Steve Hayden, and the COO of the world's most celebrated digital agency, Nick Law. The reasons are simple. I am a grown-up, George. I am not. And as such, I can talk about business issues with CEOs and CMOs. I can translate their issues into work that's both empathetic and motivating in any medium. Then he goes on to say all the famous kids. Then he goes on to talk about all the famous big brands that he's worked for. I won't bore you with that.
Blah, blah, blah.
The work I create works on two levels. It works to build brands and it works to drive sales. It changes minds and changes behaviors. It tugs at hearts and influences brains. Accordingly, my work has won awards and recognitions, blah, blah, blah. George, how do you? Like, that's the, like, I could never do that. How do you do that?
Well, you know, to be completely honest, that was an act of desperation. You know, I mean, I had two kids at the time. I was unemployed when I wrote that. You know, they're both expensive. They're, you know, they were probably both, I was probably paying two tuitions at the time. You know, we live in Manhattan, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's an act of desperation. You kind of go, you put aside your self-hatred for a few minutes and you say, well, how would I market? I mean, that's marketing. How would I market myself? You know, you don't lead with, you know, may cause cancer. You know, makes your lawn greener. So
maybe you transcended like your own self-hatred to actually care because you have a family. You have kids. Well, you have two children, and you have a wife. Though your wife is she's made good money too. But
they count on me.
And they count on you. Have people that count on you.
You can't. I mean, and worse than that, when you've done okay for a while,
mm-hmm.
You don't want the cleaning woman to know you're a bum. Because you don't want to be home on the Thursday she's there because she's like, oh, this guy's not working. I might not get paid. I'm not cleaning this shit. You know, so, I mean, that's like the God's honest truth. You really don't want them
okay.
to know.
So here's what I think is also a fundamental difference between us. We're both competitive, right? So you're on board with this conversation, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, the thing is that... I mean, we got to like make a little bit of allowances for sexism. I'm female,
yeah,
and you're male, and you're like a tall, like prodigious looking. You're a strapping like guy, looks great in a suit. I'm crazy looking, and you know, whatever. So there is, and women, you know, whatever. So there's a little bit of difference there, but there are a lot of powerful women in advertising, all that crap. But I think that you have this amazing talent. And besides, actually, we're taking for granted that we're both talented copywriter, art director people. That's a given. But I think that you are really, really good at, I don't even know how to say it, but like kind of summing up, communicating about the work, communicating the work and communicating to the people that you need to be sales, selling the work, selling the ideas, expressing yourself, but maybe in a way that people take you seriously. That's
You know, like I don't know how I got that. I'm not trying to be self-effacing or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of it is, I think, more the copywriter's craft, because we take, you know, thousands of little bits of information and we have to bring it down to 10 words or 20 words or something. I mean, that's kind of what we do. So I guess I've always been able to do that. And then I think you're right. You know, people, because I'm tall, you know, people, but you know, took me serious, a male.
Yeah, you look good, and you look good. You look good in a suit.
Yeah.
And
I have gray hair now.
Gray curly hair looks great.
Yeah.
What about though? That I think that you're also really good at speaking with confidence. How about that? I love that. I want that. How do you do that? You do. You speak with confidence,
it's
right?
Definitely an act, though. It's
really,
yeah. It's definitely like, see, women don't do this. I don't think, 'cause
mm-hmm.
women don't wear pants as much.
Mm.
But when we were working together, if we had a big meeting, we didn't have that many big meetings, but
every meeting was a big meeting for me. I was paranoid.
Sometimes I would wear baggy pants.
So really?
Like, I felt like my knees were wobbling. Nobody would see.
Are you kidding or serious?
No, I'm serious.
Really?
And it was like, yeah, because I was always nervous, but it's like actors say, you have to kind of take an identity.
Huh.
And pretend you're that person.
Huh. Interesting.
And so I guess I did a little bluffing.
Huh.
Yeah, because, you know, when you get right down to it, I mean, half of me thinks I'm really good, and then the other half thinks I'm a total fraud. I just got lucky, and that could vary like minute by minute, like how.
Yeah, we're the same that way.
Yeah.
But you are incredibly articulate. I mean, we will own that. We will own that. Also, yeah. The other thing that George, that you were really great with, that you were able to really stand out with, which you still do, is that you're really funny. You're really good at making people laugh in a group. And you used to send out really good emails to everybody that were really, really funny, that kind of brought people together about, you know, some common situation, a bad meeting, something like that. And it had everybody laughing and feeling better. And I also want to, like, let the people know that you have developed that. Like, that's why you have a big blog now. That's why your blog is so popular. AdAged. What is it? It's AdAged.com.
Blogspot.com.
AdAged.blogspot.com. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, that was another fruitful result of being unemployed. I've been unemployed like two or three times. And I had a partner from days of yore, an Ogilvy partner from the zeros from like 2002.
Okay, George, I'm going to interrupt you. I want to know how many followers you have.
How many followers?
Or how many, don't you have like a million page views or something? What's the stats?
I get, on a really good week, I'll get 30,000 readers.
I mean, that's crazy.
I know. It's stupid.
And you know what I really love about your blog, though, and I want people to know this, is that it's, you work in advertising, but the things that you talk about are really relevant to anybody's career pursuit, I believe. You know what I mean? Like,
advertising is a micro example of a, you know, a macro. As my therapist says, because I'll say to my therapist, how the fuck do you know what's going on in an office? You've never worked in an office.
Right.
And say, offices are social organizations. All social organizations act the same.
Mm.
And, you know, I buy that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that your blog, I just want to tell people, you know, it's like entertaining and it's very relatable. And I want to let people know that it is definitely, like, I was reading your post today. It was really, really funny. Like, you were making fun of things like, what does customer engagement mean? It means right. junk mail or commission salespeople. And here's another one that you did a lexicon. It was really, really, really funny. And a vision statement. That's the first 51 minutes of an hour-long presentation. Views, page views or, you know, YouTube views. The number of people who accidentally click on your pre-roll. I mean, George, that's, you know, and you write like every day, right?
Yeah, every day. Yeah. 5 days a week.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's really impressive. That's your art project. And I guess that's really helped keep you going, right?
Yeah, it has. And, you know, just kind of stupidly, you know, it's just like, you know, the art you do, you have to kind of do it to do it.
Right.
And I know that's not profound, but, you know, you get better at these things the more you work at it. So, you know, we were talking before about, you know, a crash and burn thing I had to do where I had to do a lot of work in a little amount of time. And it's like people will say to me, how did you get so fast?
Hmm.
I'm like, well, I got really fast because I practiced, you know, like you and I probably did 100 ads together, which, as you know, is a lot of ads.
Right.
And I mean, that's a lot of ads. So that's all practice. And then, you know, doing it for 300 years is practice too. So, you know, some
right.
of it is, I was able to last.
Well, you add, yeah. you know, you're a really hard worker. Let's just say it.
Yeah, I'm a hard
worker. And you're really like, you know, you're really focused and hardworking. I mean, that's what anybody who's going to be successful at anything needs to have, I believe. Can you help me? Okay, so I have some emotional issues about working at Allen Gargano. I was wondering if you could help me. I'm going to
sure.
put you on the spot. Will you tell me the truth
okay.
now that it's in my past and I've gotten past it? So when I worked at Allen Gargano, I mean, I felt like none of the copywriters wanted to work with me. That's how I felt. And I felt like it was because I was so neurotic. Or disorganized or not talented. And I'm ready to hear it, George. Did
no,
you think
I,
that?
I
what did you think?
I don't. I mean, I enjoyed working with you. I really did. You know, I don't, like, who didn't want to work with you? Karen?
Karen didn't want to work with me because, Karen didn't want to work with me.
Well, you know what? Not to slam anybody interpersonally, and I don't mean to do that, but you could rewrite that sentence and take out the words "with me." And, you know, blank didn't want to work, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it might have been you wanted to work too hard, like you care too much. So I don't think it was a qualitative thing.
Okay, so here's how I look back on my advertising career. I look back as somebody who didn't have the emotional capacity to make that career work for me personally. And a little bit of lack of design talent, a little bit of not really great design talent. Those two things together.
You know what, some of that is also, you know, some of it, in a way, is how the industry's changed too, because design became so much more important than concept
right
around the time you were probably leaving. It's a different...
It's a different business. We went from using markers. Art directors went from using markers to using computers to be. And then I was winding up competing with people right out of school who were wizards on computers. So there's that. But what about the neurosis? It's because I'm neurotic, isn't it? It is. I couldn't hide my neurosis. It's okay, George. I can handle it now. We all know.
You know, there's probably a little bit of that, but I don't know.
I think I did a lot of self-destructive things I couldn't help. Like, I kind of was out of control about it. George.
I didn't have that issue.
What?
I mean, I didn't have that issue.
You didn't think that about me?
No.
No?
No.
No? Do you think other people thought it?
You know, I mean, there were for all the praise you sang about Allie.
Right.
It was an uptight place. I mean, if you were casting for the right job for you,
mm-hmm.
you would not have chosen Allie and Gargano.
Mm.
You know, the reason the place is out of business is because it was stuck in a much, much, much more uptight time, much more uptight, and I'd say, male-oriented time zone.
Mm.
You know, So I think it's, you know, I think it might have been, did you come in through a headhunter?
No, I came in through Peter, remember? That guy, Peter, that horrible...
Peter, yeah.
Hop.
I don't know.
He was Mike. He was like friends with Mike, you know.
Yeah, but I think, I think it was like if you had gone to a wildly creative place
mm-hmm.
that wasn't kind of top heavy with 54-year-old men,
mm-hmm.
you know, you might have been. Seen as more
fitting in.
Yeah, I mean, there was a
normal
really narrow aperture of creativity that was allowed at Allie. You know, you couldn't do wild stuff.
I
don't think.
I don't know. I mean, I also feel like the really creative shops. I just feel like. People in advertising in general, like there were really creative shops that I couldn't have gotten hired at, but I think that everybody was just a lot more aggressive by nature. You know what I mean? Or confident.
At Allie?
Well, I mean, if you look at all the hot shops during that time, like I'll think of it in a minute, but like, you know, the really cool places, they were filled with
Shy
people. Who, yeah, they were filled with probably people who were even more confident.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but I guess I wasn't putting it down as confidence,
mm-hmm.
I was putting it down more as, the place was rigid and,
mm-hmm.
and it might have like suited my kind of, skills more than
mm-hmm.
yours,
mm-hmm.
You know, because it was, I mean, not that I don't goof around and stuff, but, you know, it's a pretty straight-laced
And I felt like I was kind of a freak. It's true. It's true. It's
for,
okay.
For that agency, yeah, but not for real life.
So here's the thing about me that I think is, like, really hard to understand is, like, I know this all intellectually that I didn't really fit in there. But I still don't, in my own mind, understand exactly how that is because I felt like I was doing everything. The part of the problem is how hard I worked to fit in. And I think that I felt like I was doing everything I could to fit in, and I thought it was important to fit in, and I judged myself that way. And I think I might have been better off if I had
just said...
Yeah, just said, fuck it, I don't fit in here. This is the most uptight place ever, and been honest about it.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you left Allie to go to a really uptight place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which it was packaged goods, right? It was Darcy.
Yeah, Darcy.
You know, so, I mean, from a casting POV, like, I know you're a conceptual person, but let's just say that you had done... you had gone to a fashion place,
mm-hmm.
where they were looking for
a wacky
UBU.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, you might have been you might have been the star.
Because
you would think of things no one else would think of.
But I also don't think that I had the design skills in talent to do that.
But you know what? A lot of our generation.
George,
did.
I'm talking you out of my career. What? Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Fine. You sucked, Lisa.
No, thank you. That's really what I want to hear. That's what okay. I was trying to manipulate you into saying. No, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Thank you. This is really helping me.
No, you know, you know, I mean, design, I'm not sure it was that important because at that stage, I mean, because it was basically, you know, a big headline and a block of body copy if you're doing print,
mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like a nuanced design, you know.
What? George, I think for me, confidence is just something that I've always been dealing with. And I think also for me, being evaluated by authority figures is always going to be a problem for me. I mean, even now, do you know that I have this wonderful person, Marina Granger, everybody, who's helping me with getting my work organized and marketing myself? And like, she's actually somebody that I can go to with a specific question about this. So it's not that – what I want to say to all us old people is we need to just accept ourselves the way we are, everybody, no matter what age, and make the most of it and get help for what you need help with, right?
Yeah, I think that's – you know, that these days that would pass as wise. You know, it's good.
Right. I just think you know, that I think advertising is a very tough field if you're afraid of authority figures and you get hurt by criticism, right? Of course.
I think that's right. I mean, you have to be a little bit, you know, you have to be a little bit like, all right, I'll just do more. I'm not going to let it bother me. You know.
Right. There's more.
You know, you just have to keep coming back.
Yeah, there's more. And also, you know what else? You're good at this. The relentless hours. I couldn't take it after a while.
Yeah.
We were
on a stupid account.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you had to get the ad done because it was going to be in the paper.
Right.
You know, so there was no like, you know, in a week and a half we have to show 4 TV boards and we've got a week and a half, and if you have to leave on a Tuesday night, you leave on a Tuesday night.
But I also think that the mentality of that time, you know, that was 1990, and I think that we're baby boomers. The baby boomers were very competitive, and they were all trying to establish their careers. And I think there was a competition to see who could work more hours and stuff like that. Do you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So is it still like that, or?
Yeah, it's pretty stupid. You know, and especially being the oldest person here.
Oh, come on.
No, I am.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no joke, you know, and, mm-hmm. and you know, I like to leave at night.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people, you know, there's people who get into 10:30 and 11 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how the fuck they do it, but they stay till 8:30 or 9.
Wow.
Like that's how they, you know, that's how they work.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you still see that relentless pressure to, you know, I mean, part of what bothered me too is the way that, you know, you're really supposed to be devoted to the business. Do you see that still?
Oh, without question. I mean, there you have you're kind of a wage slave. You know, you especially as the business has gotten, like almost every other business, has gotten more and more pro, you know, capital and less pro labor. You know, you have to work harder and harder just to stay where you were. And you know, I mean, you know how they say the Eskimos have 37 words for snow? You know, the ad industry probably has 57 words for layoffs. You know, it's it's coming. Know it's coming. Because the only thing that really matters is shareholder value. And shareholders get more value if the costs of doing business are lower. So they're going to keep getting rid of people. That's I mean, that's, I guess that's a little Marxist, but that's fine. We're allowed.
So,
but I'm a little Marxist too, even though I'm in advertising.
So that always puts such a well of pressure over, an air of pressure over every day, because you could get, it felt like you could get fired any day.
Yeah.
Without warning. And is it still like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny, a bunch of guys who are around the same level as I am, people, not just guys.
And yes.
Occasionally I'll bump into them, like, while we're waiting for a VIA to take us home. Because agencies now are, you know, on the fringes of the business world. We're on, you know, my agency's on 11th Avenue. It's not like when we were working, Lisa. We were instrumental to business. We were in the middle of it. You know, now we're on 11th Avenue. So I call it East New Jersey. And we have to take car service home, you know, the ride shares. So every once in a while, someone will be honest with someone else. And they're like, oh, gee whiz, you know, I keep thinking I'm going to be fired any minute.
Wow.
You? Everybody is like that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, you know, if Arthur Miller were alive today, he'd have a lot to write about. You know, because it is, it's every bit. And I mentioned, you know, Willie Loman, you know, from Death of a Salesman on my blog now and again. You know, a man is not a piece of fruit. You can't eat the orange and throw out the peel. But that's kind of what the business, all businesses do, not just the advertising.
Right.
I mean, I don't mean to sound socialist, but it's really hard not to sound like a red. Because it's brutal. You know, they the twin forces of the industry are ageism, and along with ageism is, you know, old people make more money. So, you know, old people make more money. So what do we want to do? We want to get rid of the big salaries first. So, you know, and we can pay a bunch of kids to do things.
Well, I'm sure that's part of the reason that, you know, you're valued now is because you have all these skills that are beyond just doing the actual, I mean, you're great at the actual work, but beyond that, you also have these other skills, you know, of like actually being able to communicate to the client and have them understand what the, why the work is good for them and, you know, how you're addressing their needs, stuff like that. That kind of stuff counts a lot.
Yeah.
If you're old, you better fucking have that.
I mean, I remember when I was really young in the industry, before I knew you. And I worked with a guy, he was a freelancer at an agency I was working at, and he was a super talented guy, had a ton of awards. And he and a copywriter came in at the same time to freelance on this pitch we were working on. And you could tell she was the baggage and he was, you know.
Right. He's the engine.
But she was, and this is going to be gendered and all that stuff.
Yeah.
She was attractive and slim and tall and personable. And the art director was a schlub. And, you know, he, in an era when everyone tucked their shirts in. He didn't know how to tuck his shirt in. He was fat, but he was sweaty. And I guess I said to somebody one day, somebody senior, like, why didn't so-and-so get hired? Why didn't Ron get hired? He said, well, you can't make a lot of money and not be able to present. And, you know, okay, I was 25 or something. Okay, I better think about that.
Oh, so that's when you started really thinking about that.
Yeah,
paid attention, man. So I was in the business like 27 years. How long have you been in the business now?
35.
Wow.
Yeah.
So can you tell us like how the role of women has the perception the role of women changed, or what's up with the chicks now? They don't get harassed anymore.
Well, you know,
what's going on there? Do you remember, by the way, when the Anita Hill hearings, I went around telling all the guys, like I was flirting with them, I'd say, like, Charlie, you look really great in those pants.
I do remember that, yeah.
And I didn't fit in, no. So go ahead.
You know, I mean, there's a great deal of tension. There's a great deal of... You know, if I had to say the biggest change in the industry from when you and I worked together to today, the biggest change, and this is an old guy talking, and sure, there's changes in genders and you can't fondle people or, you know, I haven't masturbated at my desk for weeks.
Really?
You just can't do
it. Just can't do it.
You have to book a conference room.
you could probably be doing it right now. You're probably in one of those phone booth things.
Well, they call it a phone booth.
We can get off a few minutes early if you really need the time. Let me know. Don't worry.
The biggest sense of humor is, like, from a corporate point of view, biggest change is there's no sense of humor.
Oh.
I'll make a joke in front of a client because it's part of what I do. I'm a funny person.
Right.
It makes me relax, and I like to point out things that, you know, I'll tell you, this is a true story. I got a deck this morning.
Mm-hmm. A deck, explain, that's like a whole, like...
A deck is just a pile of paper.
Pile of paper with like a story
with
about
a presentation
on it. Yeah, presentation.
Right. So, you know, I work in a... In the tech industry, so you talk about things like data silos, and but the person who wrote the deck had a typo in the deck, and they said that their data isn't siloed; they said their data is soiled. Now I happened to notice that, and it made me laugh. And early in the morning, I corrected it, but it made me laugh. Now, in a different era, that like came up in a meeting. Let's say the typo came through in a meeting, and you say data soiled. Somebody would make a joke about it, and there's no joking anymore. You know, we're all so fucking uptight, and you know, everything is so grave.
Yeah.
And you'd think we were, you know, the old cliche, you'd think we were brain surgeons or something. We're just, you know, nobody tunes into our work.
Well, it's a tense situation, too, you know, if you have to work all the time and you're worried about getting fired. But I know what you mean. Yeah. I think that's throughout society that, like, all this, you know, identity politics, or call it what you want, has really taken the humor out of things. Like,
the
Whitney Biennial last night, for one. Yeah, it's true. You know, art, everything. I mean, some of it is great. The bottom line is, I guess, in the scheme of things, there's a lot of value, but I don't know. You know, camaraderie. What kind of camaraderie? Does that interfere with camaraderie or getting along, getting personal relationships?
You know, everybody goes back to their little desk and you're in the open. And, you know, I just think it's – and this could be an old guy talking and I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you. You keep up with popular culture. I don't keep up with popular culture. And there's plenty of times, like, I'll turn the TV on or something when I get home, or – you know, I'll see a commercial or an ad on a bus shelter and I'll go, you know, I just grew up, I'm like a foreigner in this country today. I'm dead serious. You know, I hear some of the language that people use in popular music, or even the way it sounds to me, or even movies and all that stuff. And it's just, this is not the world. I'm as alienated in this world as anyone from any country visiting this country would be. I mean, if you're old in this country, I mean, you live in a hip area. You know, my joke about living on the Upper East Side is every night I get a call from the Metropolitan Museum and they ask me to run over and shut the lights off. Because, I mean, no one lives on the Upper East Side anymore. You know, so, well, I know that's obviously that's inaccurate.
Right. But, I know what you mean, though.
But, I mean, culturally, you know, if you do something crazy, like walk down the street without looking at your phone, you are weird. Like, what do you mean you're paying attention?
I think the phone has changed our culture more than anything, right? That whole phone thing.
Well, there's a big thing in the Times today about a scientific study about phones making us dumber. I think it was either the Times.
I think it's true.
Yeah, I know it's true.
But also, I mean, I think, like, you know, it's interesting because I noticed that most of the people I know that really, like, work in advertising or have really, like, you know, hard jobs where they're really, you know, going to an office, they do not participate in social media. And do you think that's true? And I think that so much of our culture is surrounded with that.
You know, I despise social media, except it's given me a whole second career. You know, I mean, as much as I'm like disdainful of it, I mean, my blog is fairly popular. As you pointed out, my LinkedIn thing keeps me going. You know, I literally get 5 friend requests a day. I don't tweet. That's the only thing I don't really do.
And you don't use Instagram, do you?
No, I'm not going to start kind of.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Where I am.
Well, here's the thing about social media. The way that I see it is that, like, with this radio show and stuff like that, you have to post all the time, and you have to be part of this conversation. That, I mean, I don't do this necessarily at all, but I don't enjoy doing it necessarily at all occasionally, but there's this whole conversation that's going on, and it's, you know, there's like Snapchat, I'm not part of that, but, you know, and I think that's sort of what you're talking about too, is that, you know, you can we all use it in the way that it works for us, and what you have is working really well for you, but it may not be like a constant dialogue with people on Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that.
I don't know how people could say on the one hand, nobody listens to what brands say, and on the other hand, that we need constant content. It doesn't really make sense to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not really buying it. You know, I think about this all the time because, you know, there's certain people who really, really annoy me in the industry, who are constantly screaming at you on online videos that they call content. And if they're not delivering value, why would anybody spend time on it? If it's just, I don't give a...
Yeah.
Lisa, I know you for a long, way more than half my life. I really don't care what you had for dinner.
You'll never find out anyway. I don't tell anybody.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I don't get it. I do think that I think it is making us dumber. So we only have like 5 minutes left, and I want to know, like, what do you think? Like, the, you know, what's for the future of advertising or business? What insight from your experience can you lay on us? Is there anything you can leave us with?
I read this article a long time ago when print was kind of started to go into free fall. And it looked like magazines, and, you know, The New Yorker was going through all that mishigas with Tina Brown and this and that and the other thing. And it looked like things like The New Yorker were going to go belly yeah. up, and Atlantic was going to go belly up, and the Times was going to go belly up, and Harper's and Vanity Fair and stuff like that. The way the world is going, and this is dark, but the way the world is going is there's going to be a core of people, you know, the plutocrats, the people who make a lot of money, and they're going to want to pay money for expensive stuff, and they're going to need ads to tell them what to buy. And but 97% of the people, you know, are going to have no money, and they're going to be, you know, and that's kind of the way the world's going anyway. So, you know, because you look at kind of the magazines that we all thought were going to go out of business, it's not the high-end ones that have gone out of business. It's the low-end ones.
Interesting,
so
George.
That's kind of, I think there's
a reflection of the way society's going. That's interesting.
Yeah, the rich are getting richer and the poor are, you know, going to eat themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, so
that's dark.
Yeah. Although you don't sound as depressing as you did when you were younger, I've got to say that. Probably neither of us are.
Yeah, I have a really good joke for you.
Oh, okay.
Am I allowed to tell a joke?
Yeah, sure.
It's a proper joke. People don't tell jokes anymore.
Oh, yeah, they do occasionally. Well, let's do it.
So this guy gets a call from his doctor.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor says, I have some bad news and some worse news.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy goes, all right, well, give me the bad news. And the doctor says, this reminds me of how dark the economy is. And the doctor says, well, the bad news is you're going to die in 24 hours. And the guy goes, what could be worse than that? And the doctor says, I've been trying to get you since yesterday.
Oh, good one, George. Yes, that's very relevant. So anyway, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much. Thanks for clearing up some shit for me too. And we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Thanks, George.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
So anyway, I just want to tell you about this friend of mine, Joe. I'm never going to say his name right. Joe Nanash. And he's having a show that I want you to come to. It's fabulous. He's a really great artist. And I think this show, the opening, it's at LMAK Gallery on 298 Grand Street. The opening is 6 to 8, Wednesday, May 22nd. And he makes amazing work, very conceptual. And I think he made this really weird form of a lawn with a fence around it that isn't really quite what a lot like a symbolic version of it to show how we're all like, you know, how our world is going to shit, which is kind of the theme of the show today. So I want to make sure that you guys know about that. I'll put a post on my Facebook page. Definitely check out this show at it's called Composition in White and Green. It's a small pot of land. This all-consuming installation is a play on the classic American structure of picket fence and green lawn inside a courtyard. 298 Grand Street. The opening is Wednesday, May 22nd. Joe Nanash. There, I said his name wrong. And thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Please stay tuned. We have fabulous programming all afternoon, and download our app, you know, so you can hear all of that programming. So you go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/ if you have an iPhone, it's iPhone, and if you have an Android, it's radiofreebrooklyn.org/android. And stick around, we've got so much great stuff. Right after this, we have Lost and Rewound with my good friend and hilarious, funny guy, Elon Danziger. And then we've got Ben Talks. And we've got Brooklyn Bandstand, you name it, music.
Dr. Lisa gives a shit.